Today's episode of How Did I Get Here is brought to you by the 7th Annual Marijuana Law for Musicians, a free, hour-long, humorous presentation about the nuances of marijuana defense. It'll be held at the Mohawk here in Austin, Texas, Monday, April 16th at 8 p.m., and once again, admission is free. This presentation is brought to you by Charlie Roadman, who's a friend of mine. He's an Austin-based criminal defense attorney who's handled hundreds of misdemeanor and felony marijuana cases in Travis, Hayes, and Williamson counties. So what is marijuana law for musicians? It's a free multimedia presentation that Charlie puts on. It describes the nuances of marijuana arrests and prosecutions in Travis County. Now, is it just for musicians? No, the presentation has evolved into an analysis of the political and psychological motivations driving marijuana prohibition and punishment by the key players in the courthouse, police officers, prosecutors, judges, and defense attorneys, and marijuana possessors. So another question is, will it be interesting to people who are ambivalent about marijuana? Yeah, all you need is a sense of humor or an appreciation of irony. Additionally, the relatively mild treatment of marijuana prosecution provides a strong contrast and therefore a greater understanding of the prosecution of more serious cases. Now, Charlie came by yesterday and he walked me through the presentation. He showed me the presentation, and it was extremely informative, extremely interesting. In fact, some things he tried to skip through, and I would be like, stop, wait a minute, because I was interested in it. And also, he's really funny, so I really enjoyed it. And the presentation is exactly as he describes. It's a fly-on-the-wall perspective of how marijuana prosecutions are handled by Travis County, a liberal oasis in a reactionary state. So, if you're in Austin, Texas, go Monday, April 16th, 8 p.m. to the Mohawk. Admission is free. The 7th Annual Marijuana Law for Musicians. You know, it just might help you out. It might. You might get in a situation where you're going to be like, oh, good thing I went to that Charlie Roadman Marijuana Law for Musicians. Now back to the show.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
How did I get here? And now here is your host, Tom Howdy.
The Yard Guys are here at the apartments, and they come out. It's like it's like bees on you know, it's like a, you hear that? Anyway, all right. So this is Johnny. I have a couple things to talk about. I'm playing these shows at Hotel Vegas here in Austin. If you're here in Austin, please come out. I'm playing at Hotel Vegas doing these solo shows. I play at 7 p.m. on Sundays, and Danny Malone plays at 8. So we're doing that here for April. And on April 29th, I'm not going to play. During my set, I'm going to do a live How Did I Get Here recording where I'll interview Danny Malone. So please come out to that. That's Hotel Vegas, Sunday, April 29th for the live How Did I Get Here. Other than that, I've been having a great time playing those solo shows. I'm glad I've been playing different songs and trying out some new stuff. And I'm kind of trying to challenge myself right now. I don't know if I should talk about it in case it doesn't happen, but I've talked to a couple of drummer friends of mine. One of them was a guest on this show and a musician favorite, Donnie Wynn, and my other friend, Tavern Millard, about doing a show where I play electric guitar with two drummers, just a couple of shows where I just feel like I need to shake it up. I don't know if you guys do that. Need to shake it up and start coming from a different place artistically. You know what I mean? Like, try, you know, I don't want to put together just the regular band again without kind of shaking myself a little bit and then doing it, if that makes sense. I don't know. I'm always trying to find a way to re-inspire myself, reinvigorate, and shake things up. To kind of challenge myself and keep myself interested and keep the art fresh. So I have a kindred spirit in that, that she's not a musician, but she's a photographer, an artist, an album maker, video director. She's written a script that was bought by Miramax. She's a great, great, great photographer and a great artist. Her name is Alexandra Valenti. She's my guest today. And I met Alexandra, I think around 8 or 9 years ago through Bob Schneider's ex-wife. She thought that we would become great friends, actually. I was married at the time to someone who does almost exactly what Alexandra does now. But Alexander hadn't quite branched out into doing that yet, but she was interested in doing stuff, and we just became friends. And then she made a video for me while we were friends, and then when I got a budget to do a record, I came to her to do the artwork and do all this stuff, and then also make a video, another video. So anyway, without further ado, this is my sweet friend, Alexander Valenti. You got the blues, man. You got the urban chicken blues. I got some chickens.
Well, now that I'm down to three chickens.
What happened? You lost some chickens?
I lost.
Here, come up a little closer on the mic.
Okay. I lost.
There you go.
I had six and now I have three.
What happened? Talk to me about this thing that happened with the chickens.
Well, I was given six baby chickens by my boyfriend for, I guess it was my birthday last year. And one of them turned into a rooster, because that's what happens. Like, you don't know if they're girls or boys.
Like, scientifically, there's no...
No, you can't tell until about 2 months later. And then I thought, I was like, man, I wonder if one of these are going to turn into a rooster. And like an hour later, I hear this...
Cock-a-doodle-doo.
Yeah. I was like, motherfucker. Oh, can I... Okay.
Yeah, you can totally cuss. Okay. You can freely cuss on this. It's a place of freedom.
But he turned into the biggest a-hole, and wow. So after a year, we got rid of him. But in the meantime, one got hit by a car, and the other one got eaten by a dog.
You know...
And now we have three.
I don't resent urban chickens, but I lived in the country when I was a kid, and we had chickens, which to me seems a little normal, more normal.
It's way more normal.
So...
It's a novelty.
Yeah, it's weird. And then also, like, in the city, they do the cock-a-doodle-doo, which is just like, what is it? Why is this chicken? Well, why is this...
I don't know why. I mean, my neighbors never got mad at me about it.
Really?
Except towards the end, when right after we got rid of the rooster, then we got a mean note. We're like, well, we already got rid of the rooster, but that thing would crow all damn day.
But roosters can be crazy, because when we had chickens, we had a pool, and I remember this, that something came and got the chickens. Like a, what comes? Like a wolf or a coyote? We lived in Marin County.
Oh, probably a coyote.
A coyote or something. Came and got the chickens. When all the chickens were gone... The rooster jumped in the pool. It was almost like
in
a suicidal.
Marin County?
Yeah.
What were you doing there?
Well, I was living with my mom. It wasn't like I took a job in high tech when I was eight. I just moved up there. My guest is Alexander Valenti, who was also eight, because we're exactly the same age with 5 days difference. You can't tell who's older. Ugh. But no, my mom, I don't know. She's following this dude.
Yeah, I'd follow probably... I guess if I was single, I might follow a dude to Marin County. That's pretty sweet. Oops, yeah. Shit, there goes my phone.
Yeah, there you go. So, did you ever live there? Did you ever? You seem like you would thrive in that environment.
Am
chickens.
I still close enough?
Get closer.
Well, I went to school in Berkeley, so I hung out
so
in
there.
Northern California for a while. And then...
When did you go? It was the late 80s.
Guys, we have to really age me.
So,
it's like,
sorry.
Deal with, like, fucking...
Well, people know how old I am, and I already outed you.
Oh, man, whatever. But I went to school there, and then I never went back until kind of recently. And then I'm totally in love with it. I mean, Marin County is incredible. But even last summer, I was up in Hay Fork with my boyfriend. He was hanging out up there. It's really amazing. I mean, you can pretty much... And you've got the mountains and redwoods and
it's really kind of
a photo op dream.
Did you grow up? You grew up in L.A., right?
No, I grew up in D.C.
Oh, in D.C.?
Yeah, you knew that.
Oh, well, that's where... Sorry. I knew that you grew up in D.C., but then I knew that you lived in L.A. I didn't know if it was a
double living. Well, I grew up in D.C., and then I basically crisscrossed. I did D.C.,
I guess acting like I don't know stuff is kind of stupid to do on this, isn't it?
Well, maybe you forgot.
Full of shit. No. I knew that you did.
Oh, okay. So you're lying for the show?
What a fucking dumb thing to do. I know her too well. Okay, so if for those that don't know, explain. Like, how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have one brother, one sister.
Okay, and your father was Jack Valenti.
Yes.
And when you were born, he was already the MPAA.
Yeah, he had already been doing that for Oh, no, I guess like right when I was born, he took that job.
Okay.
But he, my whole life, he was in that job.
Right.
Yeah. Up in, so yeah.
He was the first person in the Motion Pictures Association's rating system.
Well, no, there were other presidents, but when he took over, he was the person who, for better or worse, created the rating system.
Right. And that's a pretty controversial.
It's super controversial. And there's so much confusion, you know, around it.
But, right.
I mean, I know there was like a couple like documentaries or whatever that were made about it, but I never saw him because that was after he passed away.
Yeah,
and I couldn't deal. Yeah. Didn't want to. I mean, it was funny though, because when he was president of the Motion Picture Association, there was always like, it was such a controversial job. And so every now and again, there would be like this sort of bad press that would come out, and it would really, really upset me. And my father would always say, he's like, don't, because I remember I'd be like, I want to write a letter. You know, I'd be like 10 years old and be like, I want to write a letter to so-and-so who said something bad about my dad. And he'd be like, no, the most important thing to do is whenever anybody writes anything bad about you, you just ignore it, because then it dies.
Right.
But if you fuel the fire, then more and more people find out about it, because everyone wants to read about a controversy. So that was like, he was really very cool about it.
Well, before all of that, for those that don't know, he was in politics. He was...
Yeah, he was...
his title was...
He was LBJ's special assistant.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he
was in the motorcade when JFK was shot.
Yeah. And he's in the pictures where
Johnson's getting sworn in. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever talk about that? I mean, did you grow... I mean, that's a weird...
Oh, God. That was a... That story, I grew up with that story. I know that story. Like,
did he drink? Like, when you get drunk, you're like, oh, that was there. You know what I mean?
Like, well, no, my dad actually didn't really drink.
Okay.
But, I
he
mean,
seems
he,
like he might
had,
not.
He had like one vodka, and that would, he'd get a little loose, and that was pretty much the extent of it. But he was like a super fit, you know, like very health conscious dude, which is probably why he never really got sick.
Right.
And then up until he got sick for real and then passed away. But.
Right.
You know, but no, he would tell that story a lot. I mean, Johnson, I heard so many Johnson stories growing up. I mean, that was just a huge part of, even though we didn't live in Texas, like I didn't really know that much, or hadn't lived in Texas until I moved here, you know.
But he was from here. He was from Houston.
Yeah, he grew up, he was born and raised in Houston.
Yeah.
And my mom is actually from Austin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she was born in Waco and then lived in San Antonio and then moved to Austin and went to UT.
Wow.
And she was actually voted one of the 10 most beautiful women at UT.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's true.
And your dad went to U of H?
He went to U of H, yeah.
Yeah, because there's like a building there dedicated to him, am I right?
Yeah, that happened like a couple years after he died. They made the communications school, their film school basically, is now called the Jack Villani School of Communications.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So growing up in that environment, like in Washington, were you, it seems like just from documentaries that I've seen and probably people have seen, your dad pops up in political documentaries and he pops up in Hollywood documentaries. Mm. And I think it was the one about Lou Wasserman.
Oh, yeah.
That you kind of get an idea of how he got that job, because Lou was obviously kind of embedded in the...
He pretty much found, you know, he knew my dad, I guess,
right.
You know, during when he was with President Johnson, and sort of like
handpicked him.
Yeah.
And Johnson was like, you have to go, because this guy like runs everything.
Yeah.
You have to go do this now.
So yeah, he was a huge part. I mean, he wouldn't have done that job if it wasn't for Lou Wasserman.
So
I mean, it was funny when I was a kid, we would go out to LA and like go over to Lou Wasserman's house, and that was pretty, I mean, at the time it seemed kind of, I didn't really understand that it was sort of a big deal, you know, but all I knew was it was this really tall dude.
What was his house like?
It was, I do remember that.
Oh, Jesus.
It was fucking incredible. I mean, it was just one of those classic kind of, you know, 50s
Hollywood.
/ 60s,
yeah.
Like, you know, ranch style, epic houses, you know, where everything's sort of on a switch, you know, like movie screens like pop in down from the wall and like, you know, doors open, like, and you know, the whole house like opens up. It was pretty incredible.
Blow your mind. Did you guys have that kind of stuff?
No, it was, we had a pretty like I don't know, kind of modest,
yeah,
you know.
That's what your dad seemed like to me when you see those things. It's like a guy that was really more interested in what he was involved in than the like getting rich. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, he wasn't really he wasn't a businessman.
Right.
I mean, if anything, you know, we were sort of like, you know, come on, like, don't you want to like invest
exactly.
in stuff?
Yeah,
and like,
yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't until my sister got into the movie business and she started making money, and then she started saying like, I'm going to start investing in all this stuff, that she got my dad involved in it. Other than that, like, he had no...
He just got a paycheck for what he did and lived a life, but he was stoked because he got to have all these amazing relationships with, you know, amazing people. Is that right?
I mean,
he really appreciated that.
And he wrote a lot of books.
He did.
During that time. Yeah. Yeah, he wrote many books. And then, I mean, he was just more interested in being kind of an intellectual and like in relationships with people than he was about material stuff. He wasn't a materialist at all.
And him and your mom, they got along really well. And she,
I mean, they got along really, I mean, I think, you know, it was probably hard on her because he was gone a lot.
Yeah.
He was in Hollywood while we were growing up. So he didn't spend a lot of time there, and she, you know, really raised us. And there were many times where he wanted to move the family out to LA, but my mother was not fond of LA. She didn't really have friends there, and she wasn't really into the whole scene. And so she was like, I don't want to raise my kids in LA. I want them to grow up on the East Coast, and I want them to be normal. And she was worried about us becoming these kind of like Hollywood brats.
Right, because my next question was going to be like, so did you hang out with Leif Garrett when you were a kid?
No, not at all. I was like hanging out in the park in D.C. and, you know, being pretty nerdy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what were you into? Like what you...
I guess I was into like, I mean, I actually...
I don't think I even announced what you do. You're an artist.
Oh, yeah.
And you're a photographer.
Yeah.
And you make videos. Mm. And you do album covers.
Mm-hmm.
And you, at times, you do visual art that you show sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I have a guitar, a shirt that says Guitarded on it.
Oh, my
made.
God. I forgot about
I have a lot
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
You still have that t-shirt?
That, yeah, it's a button-down shirt.
No way, that's so hilarious.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm a photographer. That's how I make my money.
Okay, so when you were a kid, was that, I mean, were you informed by your surroundings that, oh, when I grow up, I'm going to be an artist? Or when you were, I mean, is it was an acceptable, that was an acceptable life choice in your family to say that, was it, or was it not?
Well, they, I really, because I was around it a lot, I really, when I was little, I wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
And that was not. It was funny, even though my dad was in the movie business and his friends were actors, you know, and I'd be like, I really want to be an actor. And he'd be like, hell no.
Why?
He used to say, what do you like, rejection? Because that's what it was. It was like constant rejection. You'd go on auditions or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think I could even handle it.
No, I have a lot of friends who are actors. And I just don't understand how they do it. Or I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm in a freelance life, but it seems a little bit. Like, I'm not the product. It's
right,
my
exactly.
work that's the product, as opposed to being the person that... It feels personal when you're an actor, but I guess a lot of times they don't... I mean, I don't know. They do take it personally. That's why they're so crazy.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't want to be... I did want to be an actor, and there were a couple times where...
Did you ever do anything? I mean, it seemed like in the position you were in, you could totally do something about it if you wanted to.
No, I mean,
like
I think
just
I would...
Uncle Lou Wasserman, when you're over there at the Epic Ranch and doors are opening, like in Star Trek, you could be like, hey, man.
Well, there were a couple times where, because his best friend was Kirk Douglas and the whole Douglas family, and his Kirk Douglas is my godfather, and so we...
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
Well, and so the whole Douglas, like Michael, Peter, all those guys, all the... boys, I knew them.
You can make Jewish people your godfather?
Apparently I am Jewish. This is my uncle in Texas thinks that we're now Jews. We just found this out 2 weeks ago. He's thrilled because he's married to my sister, my father's sister, and he's a Jew. He's so thrilled. He's been wanting to, the Valendis to be Jewish for a long time. His name is Dinnerstein, Ted Dinnerstein.
Oh, that's a great name.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. So.
What was I saying?
You were talking about being an actor and...
Oh, yeah. So there were a couple times where, like, producers would come to my dad, friends of his, and be like, we really want to put your daughter in this movie. And I would get wind of it. And then, you know.
I could just.
But it would never happen.
Dad, you've ruined my life.
Oh, one movie. It was like a horror movie. I think it was called The Betsy or something. Right. Like, it was some, like, crazy. But they wanted me to be in it. And I like threw a fit, like a tantrum, when I when they told me after the fact that this was a possibility and that they wouldn't let me do it. But I mean, I'm glad. I'm not an actor at all. Like, I don't. I don't want to be in front of the camera.
No, and you don't have like a not
at all.
Like, I've been, yeah.
I mean, in my family, I do. Like, yeah. I'm the sort of like.
And when you're friends with you, you are, you know.
Yeah, but not. I don't have the desire to, like, you know.
Right. You don't go to on auditions, which is that's the number one thing for me that I just has soured me to the whole experience is that.
Or being famous. Like, I don't have any desire to be famous.
I just don't want to go to auditions.
Yeah.
That is terrible.
Although Christopher Walken says that he loves auditions because it gives him an opportunity to act when he's not in a movie. Because he just goes to an audition and he's just
acting. That's because he likes to act or something.
Yeah, he just likes it. Yeah.
So what did you do? What turned it? How old were you when that Betsy's was coming out?
I don't even know if that's what it was called. But,
or whatever.
I was probably like, I don't know.
Like, when did the acting dream?
7 or 8 years
old.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, really young.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Really young.
When did that dream die?
Well, never really died, like, the one of wanting to be in the movie business up until probably, like, I don't know, 8 years. When I moved here, kind of, was when I realized I didn't want to be in the movie business.
All right, because eventually then you started writing and stuff. So when you went to school, what did you go to school for?
I studied art history and English. And,
okay.
Yeah, so it was like...
Did you get a degree?
Yeah, I got an art history degree. And I was basically what happened when I was a kid, I was just really into making art. Like, I was sort of the only one in the family who liked to just be by themselves and make art, you know? Yeah. And it's still to this day, that's kind of what I do when I'm not doing anything. I'll just...
Yeah.
Be in my house, like, painting and making stuff. I just like to make shit all the time.
But,
so when I went to school, I just took all these art history classes and would make stuff. But, I sort of became like this kind of faux intellectual when I was at school read a lot of stuff and like thought I was super smart. But I wasn't really good in school until I went to college and then would read like all these like, you know, postmodern like intellectual bullshit stuff that like really bores me now.
Yeah,
but it's like you kind of do
like
that.
What? What? Name something. Because I went through phases like that where like I always read something just beyond even my comprehension at the time. Just so
you'd read like
people would think I was smart.
Baudelaire and like all,
right.
You know, all those like Frederick Jameson and like all these like you know read a lot like who's the other one that I really was into. I don't know. It's
I mean, it was pretentious bullshit.
A lot of pretentious bullshit that, I mean, you kind of have to go through that phase.
Yeah,
I think
you do as an artist. You have to go through that point where you take, you know, things so seriously.
Super seriously. And you think you're really fucking smart.
And you have an insight that others don't.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, oh, I understand. No, that's the problem is you don't get it, man.
Yeah.
You don't have the depth.
And then I had this thing that I was at Berkeley. So I thought I had this like extra cachet that made me kind of cool.
Yeah.
Man.
What were you like in college? I mean, did you date a lot? Did you really?
I had a lot of friends. I had a lot of friends like who were in from different countries. I was way into that.
Yeah.
I lived in this place called the International House. So there was all these like people from all over the place. But I kind of just was like that was sort of my time to like be a studious nerd.
Right.
But I didn't really date that much. I don't really know why. I think I wanted to, but I just didn't really have the confidence, you know, and it's like, I don't know, it's kind of like a...
So it's something weird about art girls, even if they're pretty, you know, like you, they don't even get it. It's just kind of like they still feel like everybody hates them. It's like this weird neurosis that I don't think regular pretty girls have. It's like if you're an artist, like... You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, you spend a lot of time in your head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't really think... I mean, I didn't think I was pretty or anything. I just thought... I just thought you had to be smart and, like, really well-read in order to, like, get a boyfriend.
Right.
But that didn't work either.
That's exactly what every dude's looking for, especially in college. I just want a girl that's reading this obscure postmodern bullshit literature. That thinks she's smarter than everyone else.
It just isolated me further into the hole.
And big boobs.
And big boobs, yeah, which I didn't have and still don't. Like, you know. No. Yeah.
I would ask you to leave my show, but we're already like 15 minutes into it, so there's, you gotta stay.
Gotta stay on track.
You didn't have to say that. You could have said you have big boobs and nobody would have known the
difference. Okay, I do when I'm on my period. How about that?
Are you Alexandra, on your period now?
No, I am not.
Okay, so I'm just...
As of yesterday.
So after school, you moved to New York City.
Yes.
Where you assisted fashion photographer Sante Diorazio.
Diorazio. Yeah. I kind of lied my way into that job.
How did you do that? What did you do?
Well, he was friends with a producer that I knew in L.A., who had always kind of taken a shine on me. And when I was at Berkeley, actually, he was making a movie in Nebraska with Sean Penn. And
what movie was that?
It was called The Indian Runner.
Oh, yeah.
And it was Sean Penn's first.
Sean Penn's movie. Yeah, the first one he did.
Yeah, yeah, and so he, my brother worked for him, and his name was Tom Mount, and he always really liked me and, you know, thought I was, I don't know, he just kind of took an interest in me. And he knew I was really into photography. And he said, hey, I mean, this is, I was so lucky. I've been really lucky. But
how old are you, like 21 or something?
21, I guess 21. I was about 21. But he said, he called me up and he said, hey, we're doing this movie in Nebraska, and we're getting Helmut Newton to shoot the one sheet for the movie, which is, you know, the poster. He said, do you want to come to Nebraska for 5 days and assist and hang out with Helmut Newton?
Wow.
And I was like, fuck yeah, I want to do that. Are you kidding me? So I flew to Nebraska while I was in school, and I didn't really assist Helmut Newton. I was just that he...
A guy like that has a lot of assistants.
He had
especially
one,
back in the days of film. Now that doesn't happen anymore.
They'll have like two or three assistants or whatever. He had one assistant there who was a really, really nice guy. And they basically just let me hang around them for 5 days. And like, it was really cool. And then Helmut took a couple photos of me, like we were on this walk and stuff. And
I never
saw them. I have the Polaroid somewhere, but, and I look back and I see what I'm wearing and it's like in my Berkeley, like, you know, hippie, stupid outfit. I was just, you know.
What do you mean?
Like, it was just, you know, it's not a good look, but...
What year is this? Like, 1991?
Yeah. But that was really, really incredible. That was, like...
Yeah.
Kind of blew my mind, and he was so charming and lovely, and...
He wasn't mean or anything. Some guy named Helmut Newton is a photographer. And he was so famous at the time, too, that...
No, he was so... And the thing that really... What really endeared me to him was that he was so curious. Like, he really just asked me lots of questions, and we talked about art and photography and all this stuff. And I knew at the time, I was like, this is never going to happen again. And I'm getting this experience. Like, I'm allowed to be here. This is really...
That's a good feeling.
Mind-blowing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had a couple other experiences like that. Like, one time I got to hang out with Allen Ginsberg for a whole day.
Wow.
In New York.
What did you guys do?
At the time, it was after I'd worked for Sante, and I decided I didn't want to be in the fashion world at all.
You just wanted to hang out with poets?
No, I wanted to, I'd learned how to do graphic design. I sort of taught myself how to do graphic design, and I worked for this company called SonicNet.
Okay.
And it was like very, very early on with the internet, basically. And, through different people, somebody knew, It was a music driven website, basically.
Okay.
And so they would create these like interviews with different musicians, and then we would create these stories, these like graphic stories that would go on the web that would have these interviews with different musicians.
Right.
And we were asked to go to Lollapalooza with a camera, a video camera and a film camera, to go interview Beck. And Allen Ginsberg was going to interview Beck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so...
that's why you have pictures of Allen Ginsberg and Beck.
And Beck, yes, from that day.
Okay, go ahead.
So, and this was like early on with Beck. And so we went to the back of this trailer backstage. And well, first of all, I should mention that it was with a man who was the music director for Saturday Night Live. Hal Wilner was his name.
Okay.
Really awesome, crazy man. It was he and his girlfriend, and they were the ones who were friends with Allen Ginsberg. And okay. So it was me and this other designer, and we picked up this station wagon. And I, at the time, I lived in the East Village, and it turned out that Allen Ginsberg lived three blocks away from me. And so we just drove over to his house and picked him up and drove over to Lollapalooza, which was at wherever it was. Can't even remember now.
Yeah.
And we just hung out with him all day long. And then we went and did the interview with Beck. And it was just like the four of us, five of us in this room. And well, I got to take pictures of the two of them.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know, I'm still not a technical photographer, but I remember like holding the camera up to
What do you mean you're not a technical photographer? You didn't go to school for it, or you don't know like
yeah,
what
I'm just not
means.
A I'm not I there's some photographers who are just very they just are like really nerd out on gear.
Right.
And I'm more of sort of like fly by the seat of my pants kind
That's what I'm like with music. Like with my I'm not like a gear nerd.
I mean, I like it.
To have stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I like to have, I mean, I have tons of cameras,
right.
But, like, I don't really know a lot about,
right.
You know, different lighting gear. And that's how I know we're kind of jumping around, but when I went to go interview with Sante, he asked me, like, what my experience was, and I just lied about it. And he was like, he goes, do you know how to use a Bolex camera, a 16mm film camera? And I said yes, because I did, but I hadn't used one in like years.
Right.
So he's like, well, good, because I need you to shoot. We're going to Rome next week. You're hired. He basically is like, you're hired, but we're going to Rome next week, and I need you to know how to use this camera, because I've never used it before, and you're going to shoot sort of the behind the scenes of all this Italian Vogue shoot that we're
doing. Oh, wow.
So I like kind of, I panicked. And went and found a friend of mine who was like, you need to give me a crash course on this camera, because I just got this job and I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And we're going to go shoot Italian Vogue and whatever else we're going to do in Rome. And I think Sante kind of realized like that I didn't know what I was doing, but he liked me so much that he just
figured you'd probably figure it out before you got to Rome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did. And we had an amazing time. And that whole world was so
real quick, before we go to Rome, I have one question that I wanted to ask, but we skimmed over it. When you're walking around, I mean, this is my own curiosity. You're walking around Lollapalooza all day with Allen Ginsberg, who was in his 80s or 70s?
I guess he was in his 70s. Yeah.
What did he think of the new sort of like counterculture? That was something that he was almost responsible for starting way back. You know what I mean? This is further up the line.
Well,
him, did he walk around and was like, fucking kids, or, you know?
No, I actually
did he like music? Was he like, oh, I gotta see Living Color? I don't know.
He was really interested in Beck, because I guess Beck's grandfather was a Fluxus artist. And
right.
He had worked with, maybe had collaborated with him or something.
Okay.
But so he knew him because they were sort of a part of that whole... You know,
but was he into Beck's music? Was he like,
he was
I really
into
like
Beck's
that
music
loser,
but he was sort of like Helmut Newton this way, that very curious. And I
okay.
think that's what sort of what a lot of these like artists, I think what keeps them like relevant and alive and inspired, is that they just have this innate curiosity of people and life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know who comes to mind with that is Donnie Wynn. To me.
Yeah, totally.
Like a guy that doesn't, you know, he should be jaded and be like, I'm not going to fucking go with him, fucking, you know what I mean?
No, he didn't strike me like that at all. And it was kind of like my dad in this way, that like, it didn't matter who you were or what you did.
He wanted to hear your
They
story.
Just wanted to hear your story.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, what do you think, you know,
yeah.
about this? And, you know, my dad, when he would always ask people that I would bring around my friends, he'd always be like, you know, are you interested in politics? Or do you watch the movies? Like, tell me what kind of movies you watch and what, you know, what is your political stance? And like, he was just curious.
If I would have ever met that dude and he would ask me a question, I would literally still be there.
But I think that's the thing, like, you kind of, when as an artist, the only thing that keeps you creative is your curiosity, you
yeah.
know what I mean? That's all you have.
Yeah.
And your wonderment, like, you can't, if you become jaded, then what do you have anymore?
Yeah.
Like, what inspires you anymore?
Right.
Nothing. I
yeah.
mean, there's nothing to make. There's nothing to, It's because everything's been made.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's all kind of derivative of something else.
Sure.
So you kind of have to just accept that it's derivative, right, and just expand on it as best you can, which is happening constantly.
Yeah.
I'm constantly surprised and inspired by art I see.
You are, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Whenever you hear new bands, you always get really excited and everything, and new artists, new...
Oh, yeah, especially if it's something that, like, I don't know, I mean, that you haven't heard
before.
It's
good that we have those examples that we don't grow old and become, you know, like, wow, you know, ugh. I was just talking about this yesterday with my cousin Emily and my aunt, Olga, about there was a guy that was Emily's uncle, and he, granted, it was Culture Club that, yeah, I was watching on MTV.
Yes.
And I mean, obviously,
I like this story already.
It proved itself to be true, but I remember seeing him when I was like 13 or 14, and he came in and I was watching MTV, and he said, oh, that's not music. You know, it's music is that rock and roll hoochie coo, that Rick Derringer, that's some music. And I was just like, oh, I don't want to be like that when I get older. Because I knew even then that when he was putting on his Rick Derringer records, his dad was coming in and going, that's not Gene Krupa. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Dad, it's different, man. Come on.
I think it also just depends on, you know, where you grew up and how you grew up. And, you, yeah, know, I don't know. I feel like a lot of my parents' friends are really into a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, you grew up around artists and,
yeah,
and creative people and people that are curious.
Yeah.
So,
my parents were not really into music, though, at all. At, yeah, all. Like, I mean, you know, my dad was into, you know.
Didn't have any rock friends?
No. Well,
Elvis?
He loved Willie Nelson.
Oh, yeah?
That was the be all end all. And Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet they were friends with Frank Sinatra. That seems normal.
I think he, I don't know, he might probably
might have been some kind of like hangout at some
point. I know
point.
He knew Willie.
So, have this picture of your dad like getting high with Willie in my mind right now.
I wish he had. I don't, I'm pretty sure my dad never smoked weed his entire, right, life. I mean,
but see, there's that people was like that do that until before. They get with Willie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because Willie's kind of his generation, maybe a generation before, yeah, but you know.
Okay, so. You're on the plane to Rome with Sante.
Oh, yeah.
And was there Italian models? You guys were going there. Was it him and like a little team of assistants?
It was one assistant and me. I was the second assistant, and then his wife at the time, Cara Young, who ended up becoming a really good friend of mine, and Sante ended up becoming a really good friend of mine, as well as being my like photographic mentor. He taught me so much. And then...
Did you ever tell him you lied to him about the Bolex?
Like, oh, later, yeah, on? He knew.
Oh, yeah, he knew.
Yeah, eventually he knew. I remember one sort of early on, like, I had never handled any medium format cameras.
Right.
I had just handled 35 millimeter, and I remember his first assistant had something to do, and he was like, well, stay at the house, because he had this incredible loft, and he would edit film there, and he'd be like, I need you to help me do this shoot here at the house. We're just going to shoot these stills or something. I can't even remember what it was. They were putting a book together. And he's like, okay, I want you to go in the bathroom. Will you go and load this film for me? And I'm going to go shoot this thing. And I remember, like, walking into this camera. And I'm like, oh, fuck. I don't know how to load this camera. What am I going to do? And I'm shitting bricks in the bathroom, you know, because you have to go. I had to go in the bathroom and, like, turn out the light and, like, feel my way around. I'm like, oh my God. Or maybe he had me wanted me to take the film out and something, I can't remember, but, and I eventually, like 15 minutes later, you know, a task that should have taken like 45 seconds,
right,
you know, it took me like 10 and I still couldn't do it. And I came out and he's like, you don't know how to load that camera, do you? And I was like, nope.
Well, you're lucky you got to stay at that job. At least he was understanding. Cool.
He was, well, by that point, like the frustrating thing for the other assistant was that he didn't really vibe with that assistant, but he loved me and he just wanted to talk to me. Like, we would talk about, you know, paintings and art and, you know, all kinds of stuff. Like, he and I totally just vibed on so many things.
That's good.
So we just, he sort of just sort of became this like older brother to me. Right. And, so he didn't really want to get rid of me. And I learned. I eventually picked up on how to do everything. But for the most part, I didn't know crap. And he knew it. And so, and like, we would be on set. And I would end up you know, hanging out with like the makeup artists and the hairstylists and stuff, and you know, and they all became my friends, and,
right.
and you know, and I would really be like fucking off while the other assistant was really doing the work and all the models and stuff, and like, you know, so anyway, I had kind of had to sort of figure it out, which I did.
So how long did you work for him?
Like 3 years, I guess.
And you traveled the world, and
like, we traveled. Was it a
pretty full time job?
It was full time job. Yeah, yeah. And then, but I was weirded out by the fashion industry. Like, it was
What do you mean?
It's a really weird business.
And sure, it is.
And the people I was hanging out with, it was intense. That time was very, very intense. It was like, you know, that world was very fast paced. Yeah. You know, like. I was thrown into like, you know, a very, it's
right.
How do I say it without being too like,
you might be too sensitive for that world.
It was, yeah.
And you like quieter worlds than that.
I mean, it was loud, fun. Don't fast. Get me wrong. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. We were like traveling and hanging out with some really pretty interesting people. And like, yeah. I got to meet a lot of interesting people but it was just nuts.
Yeah.
So I realized I had to kind of get out and do something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were partying a lot.
Majorly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can say it.
Yeah.
That's half of this thing is like a drug confessional. Is this a...
Yeah. Yeah. It was, and it was just access.
And it was everyone.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
It was everywhere. Like,
and everyone's doing it and, you know.
And doing it on set and doing it.
Oh, really? You
know? Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. It was really, really crazy. And I had to get out.
It always seems when it infiltrates the workplace, then everything starts going wrong. Like, it stops being a fun kind of like after,
well, know, and
hey,
initially
after work, let's blow off some steam. It turns into like fucking,
and that was, and it was in New York, so there was something to do like every night, you yeah. know. I mean there were times where I wouldn't answer the phone calls, because I'd be like, I can't do this, like I need to go. So I moved to LA. Yeah. I got out of there,
and that's when you started doing graphic design.
Oh, I stayed in New York for a couple more years, did graphic design, and then went to LA. And
you made short films.
Yeah, I went and made some short films. And
talk to me about that. You wrote scripts.
Well, me and my best friend, who I'd known since high school, we had a friend who worked. Actually, a couple friends. Well, at the time, my sister had helped one of my friends get a job with Diane Keaton.
Right, and she's a producer, right? Your sister?
Yeah, my sister. Well, no, she works at Warner Brothers. She's
okay.
The
right.
One of the creative vice presidents of production over there, and has been for like 20 years.
Wow. So that's pretty. Keeping a job like that for a long time, it always seems like that's kind of like the record business where you're, you know.
Yeah, I mean, she worked her way up. I mean, she sort of started off as, you know, low man on the totem pole, and then worked her way up, and has just been there, and she's very loved.
Your parents kind of instill that into you guys, that you can't just, because, I mean, both of you went for the entertainment business, and I guess your brother did too,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. everyone started, you know, at the bottom. They didn't have like a... Again, Uncle Lou Wasserman, you know, slide him in or something like that.
No, because, I mean, you know, sure, you can have somebody can make a phone call for you and say, hey, will you talk to them?
Right.
You know?
But their response is, yeah, we'll get them in the mailroom.
We'll get them in the mailroom.
Right.
Yeah. Like, you know, do you, there were not, I mean, if you don't
but
know
But you didn't
anything,
go out there with lofty expectations. Your sister didn't, your brother didn't either. You guys all kind of figured you're going
well,
to have to go.
Well, they went
out
sort of more towards the business route right. of it, like. And I decided with this friend of mine, once again, sort of on a whim.
Right.
We were like, well, let's just try and write a screenplay, you know. And it was sort of this fun thing where we would like get really stoned, and
right.
we would go off in separate rooms and write scenes, and then come back to see who could crack the other person up more.
Right.
And we ended up turning it into like a full-fledged script, and we gave it to our friend. And he was like, your structure is terrible, but the script is hilarious. Like, your dialogue is hilarious.
Right.
It's like, so I can help you clean up the structure and make it into a real script, and then we'll see if we can sell it.
And so at that point, can I ask you a question?
Oh,
that,
yeah.
Does that person that comes in and helps structure the script, that person also becomes a credited writer or no?
Producer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, producer on it. And because she and I pretty much came up with the
story.
Yeah, the retarded premise that it was.
What was it?
It was like a murder mystery sort of. It was a black comedy about these two girls who try and solve this crime because it's for the money. You know, they there's like a reward out, and they're like they're broke, and so they're like let's just solve this crime.
Yeah, yeah.
And it turns into this sort of like mad caper, and it was actually pretty funny because it was sort of our voices as the characters.
Yeah.
So it was super irreverent.
What would you liken it to? Like when you say that, like, what era, what year was that?
God, I can't.
And did you pitch it? Like when you pitched it, what was your pitch? Like,
no, did we didn't you, pitch it no. because we wrote it. And then okay. what happened was once we finished writing it and then we sent it out to all these different studios and they do what they call like a bidding war. So yeah. if they like it, if many studios like it, then you sort of play them against each other.
And did they?
And they did. Yeah, and they and then Miramax ended up buying it, but it was I remember telling my dad, I was like, yeah, you know, me and Caridwin, my friend, we're writing a screenplay, and my dad was like, oh God, really? Like, because at that point he was like, do you know how many screenwriters there are in Hollywood who say they're screenwriters and never sell a script? He's like, you're not gonna sell it, and I was like, fuck you, I'm totally gonna sell this thing, you know, and it made me work.
Dad, it's my dream.
And so, but it was like actually one of those great, you know, things that happens when the script actually did sell for a lot of money. And that was my first phone call. And I called my dad.
I'm sure it was.
And I was like, guess what?
And you had no problem telling him the number that it sold for. And like,
well,
you didn't even say a lot of money. You're probably like, you know.
Oh, no. We told him how much money it was for. He couldn't fucking believe it. Like,
had he read it at this point?
He read it afterwards.
Right. I mean, he didn't read it and go like, you got that much for that?
No.
Piece of crap.
They never made the movie, though.
So, talk to me about that, because then that was a discouraging...
Well, we sold to Miramax, and it was like this big thing, and everyone was really excited, and Harvey Weinstein was like, we're going to turn it into a franchise.
And do they take you to dinners and stuff?
Yep,
and like you
dinners.
And your friend are now the celebrated, you know?
Yeah, we were like... I remember like several times we were like... bump into Harvey Weinstein at, you know, parties or whatever, and he would say, you know, literally say, like, I'm going to turn this into a franchise. Like, I love this script.
It was so good. These girls were going to need money for everything.
And he was like, they had a whole plan, you know, for like version, you know,
really?
2, 3, and 4.
And
yeah.
did you, were you guys, were you like?
I was like, man, I fucking made it. It's so
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about, so where were you at like before that, like emotionally and as a person? But did you just like literally like at these parties, like, hey, what's up, you know?
No, I mean, no, not really. But, like, you know, we did get signed to William Morris Agency, and they did what they call it, they hip pocket you, where they say, we'll take you on if the script sells.
And then the script sells.
And so the script sold, so they took us on, and then Miramax gave us a deal to write another script. But what ended up happening was sort of like this very kind of classic tale of they dump all this money into the script where you sell it to the studio, and then what they want you to do is rewrite it. So eventually, over the next like year and a half, we ended up rewriting that script over and over over again.
Taking your voices out.
And eventually it was like this super watered down version of this very kind of raw voice that was in the original script to like this Melba Toast version of the script. And at that point, like it, you know, by the last draft of the script, we realized that we would have made more hourly working at McDonald's than we would have. Writing.
Well,
I was like, this is so glamorous. But that was sort of the thing. Like, and then I was like, you know what? I'm going to just try and... I just wanted to make something, like, tangible. You know what I mean? At that point,
yeah.
I was like...
Like, I made this.
I made this, yeah. It was like... So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to try and make a couple shorts. At least I have some control over that. As opposed to, like, waiting for a movie to get made. And that's kind of what the nature of the beast is that... Although now, at the time, like, I didn't... There wasn't the kind of consumer cameras that are now where you can just go make a short and, you know, or a music video.
Right, right, right. This is in the 90s and it wasn't that long ago, but it was.
Yeah, it was.
It's like ancient history and technology, you know?
Yeah. So like, I raised, you know, $16,000 to make my short, you know, because it was.
And this is after the.
This is after this,
okay.
The script
so
and all that.
So you wanted to do something tangible. So you
like,
make this short and you. Oh, How did you raise it? Like, what did you have
to do? I wrote letters.
They didn't have Kickstarter or anything
like
that. No,
I wrote letters to friends and family and anyone I could. And I said, hey, I'm making this thing. And I got my friends, my actor friends, to be in it. And it was like a very... It made me realize how hard it is to make a movie, I'll tell you that. Like,
how long was it?
It was... I think it was 12 minutes long. 13 minutes long or something like that.
Wow.
But it was, you know, it was a sweet little short film that I had so much fun making. But I really, really developed this enormous respect for directors and filmmakers in general. Like, it is hard thing to do. It really, truly is.
Yeah.
From writing it to shooting it, to organizing it, just the pre-production alone, to shooting it, to editing it. I mean, it's very, very, very difficult thing. Like, I just... And at that point, after doing that, I was sort of like, realized like, okay, now I want to do something that's even shorter. Like, I just want to make something so that like I start in the morning and by the afternoon it's done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's something in my hands.
I know exactly what you mean. I know that feeling where you're like, God, this is like, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's because at the end of the day, what I do realize and have realized is, as I've gotten older, is that I am severely ADD.
Like, yeah.
I need, you know, I can't sort of sustain my interest in one project for too long.
Right.
So, I mean, I think about like filmmakers who...
Do you think ADD is real, or it's indicative of what started like with our generation, or maybe the generation before, because of like TV?
Oh, I think it's completely exacerbated by it, but...
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Like, oh, we wouldn't be this ADD if we lived in 1940 or something. Have a little bit more patience.
Well, there's not that many things that's distracting you.
Right.
I mean, you know, when I was growing up, I didn't carry around a phone and it's sitting in my lap and having a conversation with somebody. And if the person's boring me from across the table, I can just look at my phone and pull up my Instagram. You know what I mean? You know, it's just really weird. Like,
you're a horrible person.
No, but it's like, I was at a party the other night and there wasn't that many people there. It was just a couple of girls and like there was probably five of us there. Two of them pulled up their phones and they're playing games or looking at their Instagram, like not incapable of even having a conversation.
That happens a lot. Yeah.
It just happens a lot. Yeah. And like, there's this book out that I really want to read called Alone Together. I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's basically about this culture about how we can sit in groups and, quote, socialize, but we're actually interacting with people on our phones, you know?
I always wonder that's a different conversation. So you started doing shit you could do in a day?
Yeah. I decided basically I wanted to go back to photography.
Right.
And I started to get very unhappy in Los Angeles and realized it was too big and I wanted a community. I wanted to work with people. I wanted to collaborate with people. And so I moved to Austin.
Right.
And
that's when I met you, because I met you pretty shortly after you moved here, right?
Yeah, I think I had been here about a year, maybe not even a year
when
I met you. Yeah. I remember what you were wearing.
You do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Aww. You were wearing a jean jacket and jeans. Yeah. We were at Antone's.
I remember meeting you at Antone's. Corey Schneider, Bob's ex-wife, wanted us to meet.
Exactly.
And she was right.
Yep.
Yeah.
I know. I was like, man.
You're awesome.
I know.
And so you came back, you came here, and you started working on, I remember at that point you were doing a video for Bob. You were...
Oh, yeah. I did a video for Bob. Once again, not knowing what the hell I was doing.
Was that the first video that you made?
I think it was. Yeah.
Hey, I've sold this script. I made a 12-minute short with actors.
Yeah,
I'm meant to make a video.
But I still didn't really know. I just don't know what I'm doing ever. I mean, still,
you know,
it doesn't
but
matter
in
what
a
it
good
is.
Way, I mean, it really works out because when we first thing that we ever did together was a video for my song Back of a Magazine.
Oh, my God.
That you started out like, well, I'm going to do this. And you did it because I felt like... You were like, I'll make a video. I want to do this. Like, you wanted to do it. Like, you were excited to do it. And then
I wanted to experiment. I had this whole idea in my head, and I wanted to see if it would work.
Right.
But I didn't, had never done it before.
Well, wait, before you went into it, though, I don't know what you're talking about, but at first it was just like filming me and all these things, and I had played all the instruments on most of the record, and so they were going, you were going for this vibe, and we went in and shot that day. I was sick. We shot like 1 or 2 days.
Yeah, I think it was 2 days. Yeah, you had the flu.
And then you called me and you said, I have a completely different idea. Let's get together. And when you explained it to me, I was like, that is like, I don't think that that's feasible for one person to do.
And it,
and
took,
it took months.
It took like 4 months to make it.
Took a long time. But you, I mean, explain what you did so that people understand. Well, basically understand.
What we shot.
Because it's amazing to watch. I mean, it's I mean, sometimes I forget about it and I will see it, or someone will post it on Facebook, or someone will say something to me about it. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
And that was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It basically, okay, so we shot the video and I wanted multiple versions of you. So we shot it sort of against I think we did it against a green screen. And then I decided I wanted to animate it. I wanted it to be animated.
Yeah, that's when it got hard.
And so I decided.
It was like the poor man's animation though, right? It wasn't like, oh, I'll just, it was animated.
It was, yeah, there was no like special effects. It was all in camera or whatever, but I basically, I edited the whole video and then I printed out the video frame by frame.
For every frame.
Every single frame of the video.
Yeah.
And then I drew on every single frame.
On the video.
And then I scanned, I drew and colored in every frame, scanned it back into the computer.
Yeah.
And then it became a video. It became a video. But it was about 3,500 pieces of paper.
Wow.
That I drew on. It's like so ridiculous. With no, although a couple times like people came over, to help me
but
draw.
But I remember, and then I was, after we did, me and Sandy like, did a bunch of stuff. You're like, I threw it all away.
No, because I had to do it over because I was being very anal about how I wanted it done, and I had to redo it. But
I'm so flattered that it's, you know what I mean, that I was, that it's my video.
It was
know what
so
I mean?
Fun though, like
it was.
I can't believe I wasn't even smoking weed back then. I mean, that would have been the time to really have been like my heavy duty weed smoking time was during then, because I probably could have cranked it out in a month.
Were there ever times that you thought like to yourself, like, it's fucking, man, fuck this. I could just call Johnny and be like, hey, whatever, I was doing you a favor, homeboy. We're just going to forget it.
No, I totally wasn't. I was like genuinely so excited and inspired by it. And I was like, I think I might be onto something here. Like, it was just insane. I thought like this, but that kind of tedious stuff I really sort of get into. That all my paintings and stuff are very, very sort of tedious.
Yeah.
You know, like I can way nerd out on something right. like that.
Well, you should definitely see this video and you'll see what we're talking about. It's for a song of mine called Back of a Magazine. And so anyway, so from then on, you went on to do album covers and stuff for people.
Yeah.
Which we also did one of those.
Yeah. Actually, yours is one of my favorites.
Mine too.
Yeah.
I just got that album back.
You did?
I have 600 of them. I got everything back, like the whole thing.
I love that cover. I felt like that was really fun.
That was another one that you really went all out on.
Like, yeah, that was when I created, I cut all these characters out and like create these little dioramas, and then I shot them. And so I basically created...
Oh, that's what that's called, diorama. It's because it's got a little popsicle stick that holds it up. Yeah.
Well, I just like created little sets.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then shot that. And then that became... So it was like an art piece. It felt like, yeah. It was really fun. But yeah, then I just started... I think from...
Well, you know what? I'm going to... Can I go ahead? Because this is going to... This will, I think, explain even a little bit better about your artistry. You didn't just make little sets that looked cool. You went in and found images that made up my life.
Mm-hmm.
That was a little bit more than just like, I made these cute little sets with Dear Emmas. It was more than that. Like, there was some emotion that you tuned into and pulled out of visually, in that record.
Well, I can't remember what happened first, but I remember wanting all your photo album, your family album.
Yeah.
And then like seeing pictures of your mom, and I was like...
And they had just reopened the case and all
no,
that stuff.
No, they hadn't.
No, they had. Before I made that album, they did. I mean, that was open since 2007.
I thought it happened at the same time. Like, the thing that was so kind of the weird part of, I thought about that was that it had happened.
They found out who it was at that time, I think, is the thing. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, the way I kind of remember it was that it was this weird coincidence that it right. happened, where we were doing stuff with the pictures of your mom, and then yeah. that thing, the case reopened, and we'd yeah. already started, like,
yeah.
Xeroxing, like I was doing.
I think so, yeah.
Because I remember feeling like, whoa, that's weird
yeah.
that we would do that right now. But me just like seeing all those pictures of your mother and like being really blown away by how beautiful she was. And like that picture of the two of you was just like, I mean, there were so many cool things about it. And because I know you and knew yeah. you when I was making it.
Does that make, I mean, obviously it does make a difference, but do you feel connected on different levels with artists that you don't know yeah. as well? And like I get this, you know.
It makes you want to work harder.
Right.
Because you really want that person to like it and feel good about it.
So you've done different stuff with the Black, I think it's funny that you have the Black Angels and the Archangels.
Oh, yeah.
Ockerville River, Charlie Sexton, Justin Timberlake, Matt Morris, The Happenings, The Brothers and Sisters, Twilight Hotel, Dustin Welch, Crooks, Me, Joe Krasovich, Four Thieves, Electric Touch. Did you do the Four Thieves album cover?
I did the
Electric Touch.
I did Electric Touch.
Pictures
for the, yeah. that went inside the record, or okay. maybe on the back of the record. I can't remember. And then the Four Thieves, we did my photos were on the EP they released, or like the single that they released.
Yeah,
It was a picture of Shane, like with his
right.
pants, like kind of showing his pubes, but it was like this really cool photo, like black and white photo.
It's my pubes yeah. down there. Do you like them? Do you like my pubes?
You like my English pubes? My Nottingham pubes.
It's my pubes down there.
Oh, Shane, I'm sorry.
I love him so much. I do.
I know, he's such a sweetheart.
Yeah. So talk about when you go, it doesn't matter really what you're, I mean, you get hired to do the photography for albums, then you get hired to sort of do the whole packaging and the photography. Do you get hired to do packaging also without having done the photography?
Well, it really just depends. I mean, it could be someone could say, hey, I want you to take my pictures that will eventually be the press photos, and I want you to incorporate them into the record themselves. Okay. Or they'll just say, I just want press photos.
Okay.
I don't want you to do the record. But nowadays I kind of feel like it's such a tedious process that unless I get enough creative freedom, I don't really want to do them, because that's part of the fun is like creating the art for the album.
You don't.
Yeah. I don't really get into it if it's just me taking orders from somebody. You know what I mean? Like that's, you don't get paid enough.
I think basically. I tried. No, you don't.
You know
and
what
that's
mean?
The one thing. I think I tried that something when we did the last video for You Can't Pretend Forever. I was like, I want to do this and I don't want to be in it. And you're like, no, I don't think we're going to do that.
I'm such a bitch.
You were like, yeah, no, 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 it's... Because I can't remember what it was that I wanted, but you were like, oh, this part's a good idea, but no, the rest of it's, that's just not very good. But I mean, at least you're honest and at least, you know, have faith in you.
Well, I know how I work and I know that if I'm not really into it, I won't do a good job. So like, you know what I mean?
Well, you know what? That's good because yeah. then, I mean, what you're doing is you're working on other people's art and it means a lot to them. And to have somebody, I have seen that happen before, like firsthand, to see somebody who works in the end of a record just with that kind of like, I'm getting a fucking minute. Well, it sucks, but I'm doing it anyway. That would be such a bad feeling to know that something that means so much to you is in the hands of someone that.
Well, particularly for a record, because it's making records like making a movie. Like you're
yeah.
pouring in a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of love. You know, and if you come in as a photographer and a designer, you know, and you're going to represent what they've just worked on for the right. past year and you fuck that up,
yeah.
that's not a good feeling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you have to, I have enough like respect to know that if I'm really not into it, I probably shouldn't do it because they've worked really hard and they deserve to get what they want. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I mean, there's times where it just doesn't, it's not a good fit. And there's times where, you know, like the Happenings, you know, they're all my friends and they were had a very, very specific idea of what they wanted. And so I was a little nervous about doing it. So I was like, man, this is, I don't know how creative this is going to be for me. But it ended up being like all of my photography and I put, you know, my spin on what they wanted,
right.
You know? And there are a lot of times like that where it really works and you become, you sort of create this like family between, like all of a sudden I for like this sort of brief moment, I feel like I'm a part of this band
right.
and I'm helping them create this vision. And like, you really feel, I like that feeling. I like feeling like a part of this group, this collaboration. It's really rewarding. It's really awesome. If, especially if you can, you know, if you can nail it and they're like, holy shit, I can't believe you. Like, I had this one experience with Will Courtney from the Brothers and Sisters. Mm-hmm. And this was before I'd really, like, done a lot of stuff. And I had heard that I sort of was friends with them. And I'd had this dream or I started sort of envisioning these posters that I wanted to do for the Brothers and Sisters when they were still, they're not a band anymore. But, and I started playing around with it. And I sent it to Will and I said, hey, I don't know if you need this or not, but I just made these posters for you because I was just inspired and, you know, check it out. And they had just finished recording their record and he emailed me the next morning and he was like, holy shit, I can't believe you just did this. You had been vibing on my whole idea for the record and basically created it in this poster. He's like, will you please do our record and like expand on this idea? Like it was... We hadn't even spoken about it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was weird.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really awesome.
Yeah.
So stuff like that where you're like, yeah, that feels pretty good when you can kind of connect with somebody
right.
on that level.
And so you split your time between that and also still doing like print and like fashion stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You've done stuff with Free People and Venus Magazine.
Yeah, well... Yeah, Free People I did last year. That was like the biggest sort of commercial job I've done. And that that was awesome. That was really fun. Those people are amazing to work with. And I was really grateful.
Did you solicit yourself to them or did they come across you? Or?
It was, that story is so crazy. I guess what had happened was it was kind of like a brothers and sisters situation where I had a friend of mine who I was doing the lookbooks for her jewelry line and they called her and said, hey, we want to sell your stuff online. And they had seen the photos and everything. And they had seen these other photos, I guess. So I wrote the creative director of Free People. I got her email address and I said, hey, my name is Alexandra Valenti. I'm a photographer. And I just, if you ever need, you know, would feel like you could collaborate with me, I would, you know, be honored to work with you. I just think you're a rad company. And not really thinking that anybody would ever write me back. And I that afternoon, I got an email back saying, I can't believe you just wrote me. We have been printing your photos out as reference material. We thought you were a photographer from the 70s that was dead. We love your work. Do you want to work with us?
I thought you were a photographer from the 70s that was dead.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was like...
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. They literally... And Dob will tell you the story. Dob Hanshaw, the creative director, she's like... That as she opened the email, she was printing out my photos.
Wow.
It was really weird. Yeah, it was awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, and they came down to Austin, and it was kind of like an Austin-themed photo shoot. And they all like fell in love with it and they're like have made friends with some of my friends and I got the Happenings to be in the catalog because they needed a band and
right.
It just all it was like perfect, you know, kismet. It just all worked.
That's good.
Just really smoothly. Yeah. So yeah, and then I'll just shoot I have these friends who Rachel Hunt who's the wife of Kyle Hunt who's in the Black Angels.
Right.
She has a company called Sisters of the Black Moon and
explain that to me. Is that a collective of...
It's three women, friends of mine, who have an... It's an eBay, vintage eBay store. But now they sort of expanded where they now have their own website store where they sell other... They collaborate with other designers and help... And they sort of design pieces that they'll sell exclusively on their website, and then they'll have their eBay store, which is become sort of crazily popular. They have this like incredible fan base now. And
wow, Sisters of the Black Moon.
Yeah, I've walked into stores in Los Angeles and in San Francisco, and you know, handed over my credit card to buy something, and they'll see my name, and they'll be like, "Oh my God, I'm the biggest Sisters of the Black Moon fan."
Really?
Like, yeah, wow. It's crazy. Like, people go bananas over them. Yeah.
Are there like some that Sisters of the Black Moon sounds really like a weird like
witchy cult?
Yeah. They're not witchy culty. Are they witchy culty?
No. Well, I mean, no, but I mean, yeah.
What are you working on now?
I have been doing a lot of records lately, a lot of CDs. Yeah. Amy Cook, I'm doing hers right now.
I love her too.
I love her so much. She was adorable. On here. She was.
She sat in your chair.
Got some Amy Cook vibes right here.
Yeah.
Who else? Kyle Ellison is producing a record for a kid who's got a band called Popular Culture. I'm doing his record. I'm finishing that up.
When you say kid, now that we're our age, do you mean someone like 30?
20. I think he's 21.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And he's a kid. He's a little baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
What else? And then I did one. I'm forgetting now. Crooks. I did Crooks. Finished their CD. You need to have them on the show because they're so fun. They're awesome.
Yeah.
I guess their CD is coming out in May, and this is the second one I've done for them. And then I think I'm supposed to do the What Made Milwaukee Famous record next.
Yeah, it should be coming out soon.
Yeah.
I think that Michael's going to be on here again.
Yeah. They called me a couple weeks ago and said that they want me to do it, but they need to fund the money. Yeah. So if anyone wants to help Michael and
isn't that hard? Like, I mean, there was a time like when you started doing these records and stuff where people just didn't really have much for budgets, and now it's like even worse. And then like now, I mean, a lot of bands that you work with are cool and they're able to live in a world where they would sell vinyl, but I don't even really even sell CDs. I don't know how I would sell vinyl, so it's kind of an investment. But do you where are you at with like the disappearance of physical records and artwork you can see? I mean, like, do you bum out that your shit's on iTunes and that it's only, you know?
Well, it's funny. A lot of these people want vinyl. I've done the last, Amy's going to do vinyl. Crooks is doing vinyl and Popular Culture doing vinyl. I don't know if What Made Milwaukee Famous is going to do vinyl, but a lot, there's more. The Happenings did vinyl.
Right, and so, I realize that in the last, like, 5 years or something, it's come up. But when they say it's come up, it's such small numbers.
It's obviously small numbers.
Right. And I'm saying that you do work with people that are cool enough to do that, but say, for instance, if you did work with someone and they weren't able to do that, never think about that when you're working on the art. This is just going to be this big.
Well...
Or even this big. Like, you know, the CD size is still kind of like...
Yeah, I mean,
imagine, you know, if the record that you did for me was a record size.
It would have been beautiful. It would
kick ass.
It'd be kick ass, yeah. But it's still like you do see it on Facebook and or whatever. And
yeah.
But now I've kind of been encouraging people to do these online booklets so that you don't spend a lot of money on the printing of the booklet, and
right.
It's environmentally friendly. And then you download the booklet. And then for me, it's fun because then I get to go make a booklet, because not a lot of people can afford that.
Right.
They can't afford to print it. But I love making them, because then you can really go to town and, like, you know, put all the photos that I've taken can now have an outlet for it.
Right.
And so I've really kind of been encouraging a lot of the bands that I work with to do that. I mean, I do. It's selfishly, I like it, you know. So,
but also, it's something cool. I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, I don't know. I've bought records that come with the booklets, but I don't really know how much I look at the booklet outside of once.
Yeah, you probably don't. You know what I mean? Like
I would in a record. Like, yeah. I'd read the inside or back of a record or something. So anyway,
it's kind of like the happy medium of,
right?
You know. So you're not giving it up completely. There
right.
is something
exactly.
that exists. Like, if you want to see it. It's there.
Yeah, and to me, like, the artwork of a band sort of either identifies the band or identifies that record. You know what I mean? Like, it's without it, it's just so weird. It's just such an odd, it's such an odd world right now as far as, like, trying to create and sell music, especially rock and roll, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's weird. I don't really... I mean, it's funny. Like, I kind of don't really think about the end product that much. I kind of think about the project itself.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I get to make this thing.
Yeah, that's good.
You create this piece of art, and then it's done.
You're right.
It and then you move pure. On.
You're right, right.
Because
right.
then if you think about the end product all the time... I can't at this
yeah,
point.
Yeah, when you're stuck with it though, and you got to go out and like, you know what I mean? You got to put it out. You got to go play at the record store. You got to, you know, yeah. sign them when somebody, you know, I would love the luxury of walking away from it.
Yeah.
When I produced records, that was a nice thing, except for that I always felt like I had done something wrong to the people that I had produced.
No, I'm sure that you didn't at all.
Well, I made everyone's, I took too much, whatever. I took a lot of time. Longer than I had said at the beginning that I would take.
What, to produce the record?
Yeah. Like, oh, you only need this much because we can do it this fast. Don't worry. Oh, dude, I work so fast. Like, by the third day, they're like, okay, dude, we're literally 3 days behind.
Yeah, I mean, but making a record, designing a record, all that stuff takes way more time than people than really think. Realize. Yeah. They're right. like, right. I can't tell you how many people call me up and they're like, can you just take, I just need one or two photos.
Yeah.
You know, so will you just charge
one
me?
One or two.
And I'm like, dude, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Like, you guys.
We just took two photos right now with my phone, and I feel horrible about myself. I literally have not stopped thinking
like,
about it
you
this
design,
whole interview.
If you design, will you just do this one quick design on
yeah,
the record?
Quick.
Like, this doesn't work.
Did
that
I say that to you ever? I don't say that stuff, do I?
My no, you never said that to me. It's been said to me many times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it's. That's okay. I have to always explain it.
You're going to go back to your house where you have 8 cameras, 3 dogs, 3 chickens, and 1 boyfriend?
Yeah, I'm going to go back there now.
And you have a metal fence?
I have a metal fence, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go back and finish up the popular culture record and shoot Amy again this week and
nice.
Make some paintings. And yeah, yeah.
So it's just what's that tattoo you got on your arm over there?
It says, trust, flow, allow, shine, love.
What is that? Why did you put that on there? What do you mean?
Because I'm a neurotic mess and I need words to remind me.
I like
me
that
to,
about you, though.
Yeah, I need to remind myself of to get grounded.
Yeah.
You know? Because it's a very sort of not a very stable or I guess stable life that when you are working freelance.
No.
You know?
When in the arts.
In the arts, yeah.
It's not even like we're freelance like bankers or technicians of something that breaks and we can go fix them.
I go through moments all the time, though, where like usually it's every couple of months where I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore and I'm right. going to go work in a bank.
So you do that. I do that sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I do it all the time. It's all
I have this
the
fantasy.
Time.
Well, actually, I'd like to be a campaign manager, but something makes me think you got to go to school and do a thing and people want you to do that. Do you remember that time when I had that great idea that you and I would be pages at the Capitol for like a state senator or something?
Yes.
It could be a reality show because we were in our 30s and how awkward is that? Like, I still think it's a great idea. All right, so Alexander, am I forgetting anything?
It's
starting to warm up with the AC off, isn't it?
I'm good, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to tell people? Anything coming up? Any shows or anything coming up for you?
Art shows in June, but that's not for a little bit.
People can find your art at alexandravalenti.com.
Yeah, all my photos. I'm actually going to be putting up an art-only website.
Okay.
Pretty soon.
Is that what's the Alexandra in the Forest website? What's going on?
It links to
even go there.
No, it's the same. It just links to Alexandra Valenti. Okay. It's just all my photos. It's my online portfolio.
We can go see, and you have, examples of your work with all the bands you've worked with and
the
fashion people.
And the fashion people, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
I love you, Alexandra.
I love you, too. Thank
I'm
you so
I'm glad you came
much
over and you were on my podcast.
I hope I didn't sound like a retard.
No, you don't sound like a retard.
Okay,
and I asked you last week that if I do some interviews with weird people from the Psych Fest, will you co-host with me?
Oh, hell
this
yeah.
This is me on the spot.
Yeah.
This is how I get people to do shit for me now. Well, I'm going to put it out there and everyone's going to see you're a jerk.
Okay.
So you will do it.
I'll totally do it.
Yeah, you sound great on the headphones.
You know, well, I'm a little nervous, but you know.
We're just hanging out.
I hope my mom doesn't hear this.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I'm joking.
Did you hear my stomach grumbling?
Is that you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I got to go anyway because I've got to do the commercial for marijuana laws on your
Oh, sweet.
On your podcast. Awesome. This podcast is brought to you by my friend Charlie Rodman and his marijuana law symposium for musicians at the Mohawk.
No way.
Yeah. Alexandra Valenti, alexandravalenti.com. You can find her stuff. If you're a musician out there, you should get her to do your stuff, make videos. And you're a very trustworthy artist, and I love you very much. Oh, and I'm glad you were on here.
Thank you so much. I love you too.
All right. That was my friend Alexandra Valenti. It's so nice to have her come by and sit down and talk and kind of go through what she does. Honestly, she's a brilliant artist. We've made a couple of really good videos together. One's called You Can't Pretend Forever. And the other one we talked about extensively, Back of a Magazine. It's really good. And she did all the artwork for my album, Up by Yasuo. Look her up, alexandravalenti.com. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe to us on iTunes. We're available on Stitcher. And like us on Facebook. All right, you guys. Take care.